your operations go? Fundamental questions. I haven't heard anybody really give me.
Well, the self-censorship, issue, Grant, is an absolute within the commercial structure. If you're, you know, if you're taking, I don't know, if you're taking Ben and Jerry's money, let's say, I mean, come on, it's ice cream. How can you get mad about ice cream? I'm using Ben and Jerry as an example because I can't think of anything they're doing that pisses me off. You know, no recombinant bovine growth hormone in the milk that they use for their ice cream. No Guar. I don't know. Maybe they do have Guar gum and locust bean gum. I'm not sure.
I don't think so. They're pretty scrupulous.
But anyway, sooner or later, if let's say, you know, and there's, okay, I know what, there's been labor stuff. You know, if there's a labor action or a labor dispute at Ben and Jerry's, now Ben and Jerry's is writing my paycheck with their advertising. But my fundamental inclination is always to stand with the workers. Now, because they're writing that paycheck, I'm in a pickle. Because my morals are now up against my wallet. And that's where that quote comes in about it's mighty hard to get a man to understand something when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it. Because at that point, some portion of me would look at the workers and say, you know, why can't you people just get along? And you know, that's the quandary I've got over the school levy here in Fayette County. I'm as pro-labor as the day is long. But there's a lot of union workers out there that are actively engaged in lobbying to kill my community. Now, how am I supposed to feel about that? I don't take too kindly to it.
No.
But I also understand they need the work. And it goes back to what Kevin mentioned earlier in the show. Hey, looky, we've got them divided again.
Well, that's sort of why what I was trying to pursue. Sort of hastily in the background, you know, private conversations with a certain mutual friend or mutual acquaintance.
Yeah.
I've been looking to pursue this because I think the strategy you outlined is a good one. I think it's worth pursuing. And incidentally, I'm gathering information right now about what might be possible. I want a green infrastructure, and I want a green industrial base. There is no doubt in the talent we have. Everything that we need, except a group of investors lined up to actually make it happen. That's the part.
That's the rub. And where you're talking about radio, or media, the rub comes in the form of the question. What needs to be done is that there needs to be some sort of nonprofit model. Whereby people can do the right thing, and you don't have to run up against that commercial conundrum. Because the minute that somebody writes you the check, you've self-censored. Because even if it doesn't tangentially, even if it doesn't directly impact your thoughts, it will do so tangentially.
Indeed.
Well, Grant, we run right up against it. Wonderful conversation. I'm glad you called in.
Yes, I'm glad as well. I enjoyed our conversation.
And we will continue to pursue these things. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Take care.
All right. Take care, Grant. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Oregon in the Portland area, that is our buddy Grant. Let's see. One more call to try to get in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Lee in Austin.
Hey, what's up, Lee?
I got a quick question for you. I heard a thing. Are you hip to the Justice Act that Feingold's sponsoring right now?
Haven't learned about it, but probably sounds like I oughta.
It's about the whole sneak and peek. You know, it's one of those things like when you have the drug war and they go, well, it's, you'd have the drug war, so they'd impose those laws. They dumped the RICO thing on for conspiracy. You know, the mob's kind of broken, you know, but they never really, you know, they just say they dial it back kind of thing. But it's really like they're moving the goalposts around, if you know what I mean.
I do know.
And they were talking about that sneak and peek is never good for terrorism. You know, I mean that, you know, that the whole thing is it's going to be used for criminal stuff. Yeah, so instead of them rolling it back, why aren't they actually getting out there and saying something like, you know, well, for in use of terrorism only? Does that make sense? Am I saying it right?
Yeah, you are. In other words, to limit it to terrorism applications?
Exactly. But instead, they're just like, well, we'll roll it back, but they're not going to do that. You know what I mean? They're not going to limit it to terrorism things only. You know, all they have to do is go and put one sentence in and go, so the Patriot Act when it comes to terrorism.
Augustus, throughout his reign as Caesar, every couple of years he promised that he would restore the Republic. Just as soon as we've taken care of this last little barbarian horde problem, I'm going to restore the Republic.
Yeah, so again, it just feels like we're being, you know, sold down the river, whatever it is. And one last quick thing, I'll let you go. But you know that case you guys love quoting, the 1866 Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific?
Yes.
Do you know who the Chief Justice was on that case?
Oh, God, I used to. Tell me, help me.
Morrison R. Bones, class of 1836.
Okay, say the name again. It got kind of garbled.
Sorry, Morrison R. Waite, W-A-I-T-E. And he was Skull and Bones in class in like 1836.
Why am I not surprised? You know, you can't get anything past that crowd.
But it's, you know, tinfoil hat stuff, so, you know, I'll just let it go at that.
Yeah, right.
Look, you have a great week. I just wanted to mention that thing about the Justice Act. And, oh, by the way, three more 9/11 workers. I found this on, I think, New York Daily, NY Daily, maybe? Three more 9/11 first responders died in 5 days or so this week.
Oh, Jesus.
And and they mentioned in that story, I think I shot Sue a link, in that story that there's, you know, there's a bill that's been sitting on Congress's desk forever about getting help to the health and restitution or whatever, recompensation or whatever they called it, to the first responders.
No, well, I remember when the Bush administration wanted to cut funding to New York because they were afraid that it was going to go to too many, there was going to be too much workers' comp out of it.
Yeah, the bill that's sitting around, hold on, I've got it right here, and I'll let you go. It's called the James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act, named after an NYPD detective who died from his post-9/11 ailments. But anyway, it's the end of this show, so I will let you go. You have a wonderful time, and...
Well, Lee, thanks so much for calling in, and I really do appreciate your patience, and we'll talk longer next time.
Yes, sir.
All right, bye now.
See ya.
And that is how, in a matter of what seems like bare minutes, 3 hours go by. Thanks, everybody, for getting the week off to a great start. Back tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel. You know how to do it. I hope you'll be here, because I will. And join us then. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold, who continues to recover and continues to receive all our best wishes. Thanks to Ben Birch. And best wishes to... Katie Birch, who is a wonderful, wonderful human being and is getting better after an illness. We love you, Katie. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Big meeting tomorrow night. We'll probably wind up talking about it on Wednesday. Coal River Mountain Watch is the hardest working, bravest people I know. And they're always proving why. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Thank God it's Monday. It is I think we may have a new feature here. I'm not sure. I think we may have a new feature. I'm thinking of calling this, and tell me what you think, and don't hold back. Don't be afraid of your feelings. I'm thinking of calling this Moran Monday. How do you like that? Moran Monday. I don't know if we could, if we had a really good girl singer, there might be even be a parody in the works. Who was it? The Bangles? Manic Monday? What was that? Susanna Hoffs was the lead singer or something? Have I got that right? And, Moran Monday. Just another Moran Monday. That kind of thing. And what do I mean by that? Well, I thought we would look at some Moran conduct. In this particular instance, Moran conduct coming from the for-profit media. You know, the martini and morphine set. That crowd of paid shills in Washington D.C. who breathlessly have fits over things the Obama administration does, they never somehow found a way to have fits about when the Bush administration was doing it. And, you know, it's there and it's closer to home, too. But I don't know, that seemed like it might be appropriate. Moran Monday. And, of course, I think if you're going to have a Moran Monday, you just can't do it. You simply cannot do it without dealing with Chicken Noodle News's Howie Kurtz. And in this particular instance, the breathless pearl-clutching coverage of Ms. Dunn's comments about, you know, reality. The fact that Fox News is a propaganda arm of the Republican Party. It just is. How is it not? You know how I know the truth of this? Because a few minutes ago, I saw the rodeo clown, Lonesome Rhodes. They're on that self-same Fox network, bloviating. And breathlessly, we got to, I don't know, maybe we need a campaign to start sending pearls to Glenn Beck so that he can clutch at them. Because he took that story, and you know what I'm talking about, the one where Anita Dunn, White House Communications Director, showed up on Sunday and said, well, you know, it's not like Fox is a real news organization like CNN or anything. They're a right-wing propaganda arm of the Republican Party. Washington, inside Washington, shocked. They were shocked. They couldn't believe that someone would say something like that. How incivil! I'm clutching for them. I don't even have pearls, and I'm clutching for my pearls here. Breathless. It was too much to contemplate. You know what I'm talking about, of course. I'm certain that you do. You can't not. In case you're wondering, well, I can help with that. We have audio, and we also have a story breaking today about a new report coming out from, lo and behold, the insurance industry. We just got the ransom note. Really, how is this not a ransom note? We did. We just got the ransom note. If you go through with this reform thing, we're going to jack your prices up 111%. How's that? I mean, that's sort of the accounting equivalent of mailing us the tip end of somebody's finger. And seeing how you've lost the tip end of your finger, putting that sucker back is a pre-existing condition. And you're not covered, America. You're not covered. How do you like that? Take that. Don't fool with us. Yeah. Well, a report came out today. Now, never mind the fact that the methodology is extremely spotty. And not exactly anything you would call a methodology at all. But Representative Anthony Winder of New York got it right on the first try. He looked at this report, and he said, you know, if you have the healthcare industry complaining that we're going to raise costs because of these charges, it is them putting us on notice that we haven't put enough cost containment in the bill. You know, the healthcare industry themselves is putting out a whole report saying that. That should be a tell to the Baucus team that, you know what, maybe it's time for them to go back and revisit the public option. In a strange way, and look, obviously they didn't mean this, the health insurance lobby today fired the most important salvo in weeks for the public option because they've said, as clear as day, left to their own devices, according to their own number crunchers, they're going to raise rates 111%. You know, I think if we were, I think if healthcare was run by the mob, we'd probably have a little bit better business dealings here. Just saying. Oh, and by the way, this story about this that I'm looking at, and I know I'm commenting on a photograph now. This is the dancing about architecture part of the program. But I'm looking at a photograph of Karen Ignani. I got a figure in its native Italian. It's got to be Ignani, but it reads Ignagni. I'm looking at a photograph of her here, and she looks like she had plastic surgery done after having been treated with the Jack Nicholson Joker's Smilex. Ooh, honey, I don't want to walk in the door and have you smiling at me. Ooh. Sorry, sexism on parade. My bad. That's okay. Agnes will spank me later. No, not like that. She will chastise me. She will chastise me for my overt sexism, and I apologize. But that's one ugly woman. But anyway, to get back to the martini and morphine crowd, the M&M crowd, they were terribly breathless over this simple comment over the weekend. Sunday morning on CNN's Reliable Sources with with how in God's name did he ever get on television, Howie Kurtz. It helps to have a wife who's big in the PR lobbying business. It really, really is. No, this is White House Communications Director Anita Dunn speaking plain and simple facts.
We're talking about conservative commentators, so let's talk about Fox News. Yeah. You were quoted this week in Time Magazine as saying of Fox News, it's opinion journalism masquerading as news. What do you mean masquerading?
Well, you know, Howie, I think if we went back a year ago to the fall of 2008, to the campaign, that, you know, it was a time this country was in two wars, that we'd had a financial collapse, probably more significant than any financial collapse since the Great Depression. If you were a Fox News viewer in the fall election, what you would have seen would have been that the biggest stories and biggest threats facing America were a guy named Bill Ayers and something called Acorn. I mean, the reality of it is that Fox News often operates almost as either the research arm or the communications arm of the Republican Party. And it's not ideological. I mean, obviously, there are many commentators who have conservative, liberal, centrist, and everybody understands that. What I think is fair to say about Fox, and certainly the way we view it, is that it really is more a wing of the Republican Party.
Okay, just a minute. Let's work through this real quick. That's a healthy little 1 minute and six second sized chunk of sound to get through. Is there anybody out here who doesn't think Fox is an arm of the Republican Party? Has a story ever aired on Fox News that did not somehow or another advance the Republican agenda? Now, see, compare. I know. We're comparing ants with elephants, and I'm the ant here. I make no bones about the fact that I don't like Republicans. Not even a little bit. Republicans who see the light and come in from the cold and enter the disavow the dark side, okay, we can talk. But your average garden variety, I swear at Obama, he's a black Muslim socialist Republican. No, I don't like him. Don't want anything to do with him. Wouldn't have him to dinner. But why is this a surprise? It's only a surprise pathologically self-deluded. And by that, of course, I mean the for-profit media. I mean, you can't talk that way. It's just not nice. You're a Democrat. You're supposed to stand there and let them spit on you and kick you and stomp your feet and kidney punch you while you sit there and sing Kumbaya. That's how this system works. You are upsetting the apple cart, Ms. Dunn. I simply cannot believe you would say what you said. But moreover, I'm wondering if Anita Dunn has pressing business or a job offer somewhere that pays a lot more money. Because she put the Fox News crosshairs on herself on Sunday, and it's been proven ever since. I mean, and see, this is the only, you know, your White House communications director, give me a call, Anita. Because I'll explain you something. And it's not something I came up with. I'm just passing on generational wisdom. Because there is an old saying out there in political circles that you do not start a war, you cannot win a war. So do not start a war, and this goes, it's an old newspaper analogy, okay, so we'll have to translate it to television later. But you do not start a war because you cannot win a war with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. Because they will beat you to pieces. And that's all Fox, I just checked in a couple of times, ever since this story broke yesterday. I just over to Fox for a couple of minutes, and you know, I could hear the brain cells screaming and dying. But just to check in once in a while, and lo and behold, there it was. Click, click, click. White House says it's at war with Fox News. Click. The war on Fox News. More in a minute. Have you bought any gold lately? Click. And all the way up to the starting of Lonesome Rhodes' program about an hour ago now. And you got to love what he got out of it. I don't have any way to capture it. We're working on that. Trust me, we're working. Right now, we're just trying to keep the lights on. You understand. Oh, he had to explain to his knuckle-walking, toe-sucking, the toenail-chewing viewership, mouth breathers that they are. He had to explain to them that he did not hold himself out as a journalist. This is the old I'm just an entertainer shtick. He said, no, this is an opinion program, and we always get our facts straight. Yeah. But the reason I ask is the crosshairs are obviously on Anita Dunn. Oh, by the way, where did Lonesome Rhodes take it? The rodeo clam. He said, Well, you know this says a lot more about you than it does about Fox News, right? The Obama White House just said you're stupid. They did. Shh. They really, really did. They're not talking about Fox News. They're talking about the people who watch Fox News. This is an insult to the people who watch Fox News, not an insult to Fox News. God, I haven't seen that tactic since, third grade? On that sort of hard-baked old red-orange dirt playground of the elementary school back in Florence, Alabama? Yeah. You know, where the perennial troublemaker runs up to some, usually the most beautiful little girl in second grade and says, "He said you're ugly." And she tears up and cries, and the teacher comes over. "Johnny said I'm ugly." "Really? When did he say it to you?" "Well, Glenn told me." "Glenn, did you tell her that Johnny said she was ugly?" "Well, I'm just an opinion second grader. That's my opinion. I do opinion stuff. It's my opinion that Johnny thinks she's ugly." "Well, did Johnny ever say it?" "No. But it's my opinion." "You know what? You know, Mrs. Krabappel, you know what this, you know, this says more about you than it does about me." And again, just because the keeping the lights on here has been so much on my mind, there's millions of dollars in that crap. Millions of dollars! Huh? But let's continue with Anita Dunn. That almost sounds like a joke name. If her she spent her life making sure she did not marry a man named Goodman. Let's put it that way.
Is that the reason the president did not go on Fox News Sunday a few weeks back when he did all the other Sunday shows? And will President Obama appear on Fox News again, let's say, this year?
Well, you know, Howie, President Obama appeared on, he did The Factor, he did O'Reilly.
Yes.
In the campaign last year. As president earlier this year when he met with news anchors.
Okay, my question is, will he appear on Fox in the next couple of months?
No, you had a two-part question. The first was, is this why he did not appear? And the answer is, yes. Obviously, he'll go on Fox because he engages with ideological opponents. And he has done that before. He will do it again. I can't give you a date because, frankly, I can't give you dates for anybody else right now. But what I will say is that when he goes on Fox, he understands he's not going on it really as a news network at this point. He's going on to debate the opposition. And that's fine. He never minds doing that. But let's be realistic here, Howie. You know, they're widely viewed as, you know, a part of the Republican Party. Take their talking points, put them on the air. Take their opposition research, put them on the air, and that's fine. But let's not pretend they're a news network the way CNN is.
Trying to curry a little favor there with the chicken noodle news guy. Because that was just... But, yeah. Surprise? But still, I got to wonder if she's maybe found a better job or something. Because she's going to get Van Jones now. I see no reason why she wouldn't be. She's going to get... she's going to get Yoshi Sargented. She's going to get done to her what is already being done to Kevin Jennings. And Anne-Marie Cox is at Air America Radio, and she showed up to talk with Howie Kurtz this weekend as well. And bless her heart for at least noting the Kevin Jennings story. Kurtz was trying to manage as best he could the conversation and didn't want anything to do with the story. But Anne-Marie Cox did get a mention out there, and it deserves a mention.
There's a sort of a scam going on there in terms of like registering people to get paid for registering. And then for Kate, and I'm sorry, I have to say something about this Jennings story because I think it's really offensive. They're persecuting someone because he's gay.
We don't have time to go through each controversy right now, but did Fox have the same appetite for stories that reflected poorly on the Bush administration?
Probably not.
Definitely not. Of course, my underwear comes from Kmart. But that's unfair because that guy's from West Virginia anyway. But the Kevin Jennings thing, yeah, there is a full-on smear campaign by the right wing against Kevin Jennings. And I remember when they ran Van Jones off, I said, well, they went after the black guy. And everything indicated that next up would be the Jewish guy. But I forgot that there was a gay guy out there to hate on. And Kevin Jennings is gay. Kevin Jennings is also extremely confident. Kevin Jennings is also committed to making sure that little kids don't have their guts stomped out on playgrounds while ignorant mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging children of ignorant, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing parents scream, "Faggot!" and gut stomp them some more. So naturally, the right wing, including Fox, are full on after Kevin Jennings. Oh, and by the way, you know how Howie said he didn't have time to go into the rampant homophobia that just oozes like filth out of the right wing sewer in the Republican Party. Oddly enough, as Heather has noted over at Crooks and Liars, later in the same program, Howie Kurtz did find the time to talk about President Obama, the reaction, not about President Obama getting the Nobel Prize, but the reaction to it by the right wing, you know, the bloviating, the pearl clutching, the breathless gasping. And he also found time to talk about the David Letterman sex scandal. But he didn't have time to talk about a perfectly competent, perfectly decent, upstanding human being being smeared over his sexuality. Nope, no time for that in the martinis and morphine set. No time. So that's just a quick look at the weirdos from the weekend, more and Monday. Oh well, wait a minute, wait. Okay, just as a counterpoint, there's this, William the Bloody Crystal, who still manages to find his way onto Fox, you know, professionally wrong guy William the Bloody Crystal, who is mad because we haven't killed quite enough people, haven't gotten quite enough Americans dead in Afghanistan yet. This is interesting.
Bill, the White House says the president has made no decision yet, but officials seem to be outlining what seems to be the general shape of what they're looking at, and that is that it's enough to weaken the Taliban in Afghanistan, but not to eliminate it, and that won't require a major increase in U.S. troops. First, do you think that's where they're headed, and do you think that'll work?
I mean, it sounds as if that's where some of them want to be headed. I actually would be amazed if the president signs off on that. I mean, as commander-in-chief, he's going to tell U.S. forces over there, we're weakening your enemy a little less than we could if we actually did what the commanding general asks. But, you know, go ahead and fight against an enemy that's stronger.
A, it isn't what has been said. And B, he's a filthy liar. But who the hell am I?
Because I'm reluctant to send enough troops. And why? I mean, that's what's crazy. He's taken withdrawing troops off the table. He's not going to pull out of Afghanistan. There is a respectable left-wing argument for that, right-wing argument for that, but he's not doing that. He's taken pure counterterrorism off the table. We're not going to go offshore and just use drones. So we're fighting a counterinsurgency. He called it an insurgency less than 2 months ago, what we're fighting. So we're fighting a counterinsurgency. The general who's in charge of fighting the counterinsurgency says we can do this with the best effect. We have the best chance of winning. We're going to make the most progress. We'll have the fewest casualties for the U.S. if we adequately resource this counterinsurgency. I don't really see what's the rationale then for saying, well, you know, that's a good point, General McChrystal, but I'm going to fight a counterinsurgency. We're just going to do it in a half-hearted way. I think at the end he might surprise us and go with General McChrystal's recommendation. I just don't see what the rationale for not taking it is once you've agreed that we're fighting a counterinsurgency.
But, Bill, it's not just 40,000 or bucks.
Well, actually, wait. It now turns out this week,
right,
that the top request that was made was 60,000.
Correct.
40,000 turns out to be the preferred middle option.
Correct. So, I mean, there's several options on the board coming from General McChrystal, but the way that it's being presented here is, oh, you got to give General McChrystal all the answer. And don't forget, President Obama gave him 21,000 already this year. So the question is, where are we going? And what we've seen, if you looked at the projections, is as we increase troop levels, we have more and more casualties. It's not that suddenly additional force means...
And by the way, this is Juan Williams who threw away his credibility, years of credibility generated at National Public Radio, but never mind.
That we are additionally in command. So what we've seen in the past week is intense fighting in Pakistan. We see as the Pakistani government tries to do more to restrain al-Qaeda.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm watching video here, and just the look on William the Bloody Crystal's face when the black guy is talking to him like an equal. I mean, his neck gets stiff and the little muscles come out. How dare you!
Which is the real problem. We don't want the Taliban getting a secure base in Afghanistan because we don't want them to be a host for al-Qaeda. So if, in fact, the real fight is in Pakistan, why don't we just make sure that, for example, the Pakistanis are stable enough to keep the Taliban at bay and then go after al-Qaeda?
I know there are political pressures, but I would like to think that this president, I do think that this...
By the way, the real nugget's coming. Just hang tight.
This president is trying to make the right decision. There is no guarantee if you give McChrystal the 60,000 troops, that it's going to work. Particularly given the nature of the government that is in control in Afghanistan now.
But what is better about giving him, quote, giving him? I like that. Why do we use that formulation? The president is sending as many troops as he thinks, as he should send as many troops as he thinks best to accomplish the mission. Unless he wants to abandon the mission. But he doesn't want to abandon the mission.
Why doesn't he want to abandon the mission? Now, we still haven't gotten to the nugget yet. But why doesn't he want to abandon the mission? It's obviously a failure, and that's no reflection on the people fighting it. We're fighting an unwinnable war. The White House knows it. The brass knows it. Everybody knows it. Except William the Bloody Crystal. And Fox News, which, see above, is nothing but a propaganda organ for the Republican Party. But everybody knows! I do love being ahead of the curve. I love the fact that the horn is out there ahead of the curve. We figured it out a long time ago. Alexander couldn't do it. The Russians couldn't do it. The British couldn't do it. The Russians couldn't do it again. Even the Persians, who kind of live, the Medes and the Persians, who kind of live close to it, couldn't do it. Can't be done. Cranky Hill people. We've had that conversation. But... no, he's not going to abandon the mission. Don't know why. But notice the use of the language. Abandon the mission. Where I come from, we call that wising up. Oh, he wised up to the fact that hitting himself in the thumb with a hammer really sucked and he really ought to not do it the 15th time after doing it the first 14. But, pay attention to the use of language. Abandon the mission. Well, if he abandons the mission, consider the implications. Abandon the mission. What they're trying to say is abandon the troops. Yeah, we're just going to not send them any more food or gasoline or nothing. They're just going to sit there and get picked off one by one by them Taliban sharpshooters and IED makers. And pretty soon there won't be any Americans left because they're abandoning the mission. Because they abandon troops. Support the troops. Have you bought, that Chinese magnet on the back of your SUV is looking a little bit faded. About time you went down to the local Wally World and bought yourself a brand shiny new Chinese yellow ribbon magnet, isn't it? Time to support the troops. Yeesh. But like I said, we haven't gotten to the good part yet. We haven't gotten to the nugget yet. It's coming. It's still on the way.
Grown-up serious argument is there that's sending 15,000...
Okay, back this up just a second, because there's the nugget.
For example, the Pakistanis are stable enough to keep the Taliban at bay and then go after al-Qaeda.
I know there are political pressures, but I would like to think that this president, I do think that this president is trying to make the right decision. There is no guarantee if you give McChrystal the 60,000 troops, that it's going to work. Particularly given the nature of the government that is in control in Afghanistan now.
But what is better about giving him, quote, giving him? I like that. Why do we use that formulation? The president is sending as many troops as he thinks, as he should send as many troops as he thinks best to accomplish the mission, unless he wants to abandon the mission. But he doesn't want to abandon the mission. What argument, what grown-up serious argument is there that sending 15,000 troops is going to be better than sending 40,000 troops when the general McChrystal and General Petraeus think 40,000 is what you need to adequately resource the counterinsurgency? Maybe we shouldn't send too many bullets.
See? Maybe we shouldn't send too many bullets. Jiminy Christmas, this is sickening.
Either, or shouldn't send too many vehicles. It's very expensive. I mean, this notion that we're going to have more casualties is ridiculous, Juan. Short term, of course, if you engage the enemy, you might have more casualties. Ask any soldier or Marine over there, would you prefer to have 110,000 of you or 70,000 of you? That we are stretched too thin, if you read the accounts of the recent battles. If we're going to fight,
Bill, just asking, you know, because I'm crazy that way, but are any of your kith and kin over there, Bill? You talk about this so academically, grown-up? I'll tell you what, screw the grown-ups. Let's talk about the kinfolk. What kinfolk serious argument is there to sending 15,000 troops is any better than 40,000, Bill? Because you know what? The kinfolk argument is don't send no more and bring them all home to their kith and kin and their warm, loving arms and hearths and homes. That's the argument, Bill. Because, and this is purely academic at this, I'm just going to try to be academic, like I don't care about anybody that's over there, even though I know folks who are. And care about folks who are. Here's the real argument. If you're going to take Afghanistan, the only way to do it, is the only way that there was to take Iraq. And that's to send an army of 500,000 to 1,000,000. And then displace the population. Scatter it. I mean, look, ancient history is full of this stuff. The Bible's full of it. You either kill everybody that's there and replace the population, like happens in the Old Testament, you know, and yea, verily, God did say, kill them all! Women, children, dogs, cats, beasts of the field, kill them all, saith the Lord God. There's that. Or there's conquer the place and scatter everybody, which is what later got done to the people who said God told them to kill them all. You could argue that the scattering is more humane than the kill them all part. But those are the only two options. Kill them all, or take the place, and everybody who lives there, send them somewhere else, preferably not near a whole lot of other people. Right. You know, with today being Columbus Day and all, it's sort of hard to get around noting that when white Europeans first saw people living on this continent, many of whom were already dying off because of the advancing march of disease, they started trying to figure out they started trying to figure out where are all these Indians coming from, you know, the great Custer quote. Custer's last words, where are all these GD Indians coming from? They tried to figure out, because see, they had their holy book, their Bible, and it told them that, well, hell, they didn't even know that continent was there. And look what they had to do to get there. You know, sailing ships and months at sea and all of that. And all of a sudden there's all these people and they got these civilizations and these gleaming cities. Flush toilets. Which, by the way, the Spanish were absolutely baffled by. Bathing! but they had to figure out where they came from. And so, naturally, instead of using reason, common sense, rationality, they went to the Bible. And being as how there was an account somewhere in second, one of those stupid books, about the 12 tribes of Israel getting scattered by the Assyrians, the Syrians, the Akkadians, the Babylonians, or, you know, God knows who. And they got scattered and were never heard from again. Well, what did they think? Oh, well, granted, they don't look much like, no, they don't look like Arabs or Jews or us. Or, they don't look like anybody we've ever run across. They're lost Jews! That's what they are! They're the lost tribes of Israel! Yeah, we got it! So, no. But that's because they made an assumption that everybody was created 6,000 years ago out of Adam and Eve, and then they had Cain and Abel, and Cain and Abel apparently got it on with Eve. You got to think about it. If Genesis is correct, then we should all have big ears and buggy eyes. But never mind. You know, because of Cain and Abel doing mom. Uncle Daddy! But anyway, so that's our Columbus Day moment. Maybe we'll have some more Columbus Day moments. But there's only one way. There's only one way to pacify a region. And, you know, here's a hint. One of those ways is not to bomb the snot out of people, hellfire missile their weddings, kill their women and children, and then come in and say, hey, but look, we drilled a well. Doesn't work. Just doesn't work so good. And yet, Bill Kristol can't seem to figure that out. I find it just astonishing.
Let's fight the war. So you explain to them, Bill Kristol, explain to their parents, why are they there? They should be there because they are fighting for a stable government that's going to be able to withstand the incursions coming from the Taliban and ultimately Al-Qaeda. And if we don't have a clear sense of that mission, then I don't think you can say to the parents,
then we should get out. But no, you tell the parents we're fighting it in a half-assed way.
No, you can't. No, but don't you think we have... I'm sorry, go right ahead. Go. What are you saying?
We're not committed to doing what it takes to win. We've got a clear sense of the mission, but we're going to only do 50% of what's necessary.
Why is anybody thinking that we want to weaken American forces? We are American forces, and I don't think the president has been anything but committed.
Well, panel, thank you. I'm glad we settled that.
Oh, boy, I tell you what. You know, I can't believe that I get that I get cranky emails for watching the NFL on Sunday instead of that. Although there's plenty to gripe about inside the NFL that I'll try not to do this evening. But, you know, there you go. Giving a platform to William Kristol, who does not have the same success rate as a stopped clock. You know the old saying, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. Bill Kristol doesn't have that. Bill Kristol gets up in the morning and says, good night, sweetheart. He's that wrong all the time. What would you like for breakfast, dear? I'll have the Drano. Really? The guy is an idiot. Now, that's not to say the guy hasn't been to school. He's obviously had some schooling. But he is what Calvin Coolidge once referred to as an educated derelict. An educated derelict. So there you have it. The conversation this weekend centered around a comment by Anita Dunn about what piss-poor journalism Fox News does in terms of, you know, unbiased journalism. While the real story it turns out, then granted, I guess it kind of broke today, but you know how it is with the for-profit media. They get a heads up. Of course they get a heads up. And the heads up is this report out from the insurance industry saying that they will jack rates up if we dare to try to put some sort of responsibility onto the for-profit, avarice-driven healthcare industry. If we dare to do that, they have told us straight up that they will jack the rates 111%. You can't get any more direct. You can't get any more out front than that. That is the act. That's the act of an absolutely hubris-driven corporate scheme, telling us that we're getting just a little too uppity for their likings. You know, I had an email from my buddy David in Tennessee. Sent along a tune. Going to run it in a minute because it fits so perfect. And I did not have a heads up that this story would break, but it all, as is so often the case on this program, everything comes together so amazingly. And David said, as I watch the kabuki theater that is our government, the House and the Senate and the President, dancing all around doing anything meaningful, I have these flights of fancy. May we please move even further beyond Alan Grayson and for once effing do something, please? Right now in my life may be the last time holds a special fascination. I'm at that stage within my time upon the stage, don't you know? I have a better, deeper understanding of mortality these days. So I'm thinking, whenever the Bob rails against the Dems that are sitting on the bills that could save 122 citizens a day, maybe we should couch our conditional support in the guise of, hey, Effer, this could be the last time. Then the Bob could spin the prophetic platter from Mick and the boys that does, in my humble opinion, transcend the time of its origin. Yeah, that's two for two, Friday and Monday, that David has hit one right out of the park. Big old hanging curveball. Anything leaves the park that fast needs a stewardess on it. Because it's the truth. And it's the one truth that with the exception of Congressman Grayson, isn't being driven home. This is not an academic discussion. This is not some sort of philosophical debate. Healthcare has the reality and the real lives of some, at a minimum, 40 to 45,000 Americans per year riding on it. And just by way of comparison, let me ask, where would we be as liberals if 45,000 Americans had died in Iraq every year since George Bush started that ill-advised nightmare in the sand? Would we still have forgotten it even though we've got a Democrat in the White House, or because we've got a Democrat in the White House now and we don't want to remind too many people, you know, it's his war now. What were the numbers out of Vietnam? 55,000 dead and counting? And we were in Vietnam how long? 15, 16, 17 years? $10,000 shy of Vietnam die every year. Not because of disease. Not cancer, not heart attack, not stroke. Not COPD, not Alzheimer's. But simply because they can't go to the doctor. Because they can't afford it. Those are the realities. The other reality is that the last time we talked about this was 1993. 16 years ago. And then it went away. With the exception of the lone voice of folks like Dennis Kucinich crying in the wilderness, it went away. And every one of those years, 45,000 Americans died. Because the Congress didn't give a rat's ass. Because it was more fun to, impeach a president for a consensual sex act. Because it was more fun to debate whether or not Saddam Hussein is a brutal dictator who gassed his own people. I'm at the end of my tolerance for that calculus. I'm at the end of my willingness to put up with that kind of BS. That kind of political BS. That kind of politics played with innocent lives. Again, not dead because they were too fat, not dead because they smoked, not dead because of any overt reason except for the fact that we have a healthcare system that instead of treating people, keeps them from getting treatment. God damn. That's astonishing. Holy Moses. What happens to somebody's brain in Washington, D.C. that makes that acceptable? And yes, I understand that there's a caveat that there's a lot of people, more in the certainly in the Democratic Party, none in the Republican, who have been concerned about this all along. That's why I referred to Dennis Kucinich's time in the wilderness. To his credit, Senator Rockefeller has long championed healthcare reform. I profoundly disagree with my congressman on issues of the coal extraction in the state that contributes to those illnesses. But it's been on his plate too. And for a 12-year wander in the wilderness, not a damn thing could be done about it because Newt Gingrich had the Congress and the American people by their damn throats. And under George W. Bush, when they did get around to doing something, it was, as this bill, as the current kabuki theater, as David refers to it, turns out to be, wound up being a plum for the industry and not a damn thing for the American people in the form of the Medicare Part D, the prescription drug Medicare plan. It does less for our seniors than it does for Big Pharma. And the industry, you know, because there's administration. Meanwhile, this so-called debate is taking place within defined terms, whereby we think, well, you know, if we can get a trigger, what we can do is we can leave the avarice-driven healthcare industry alone, but we'll put a trigger in, and if they don't meet our standards, we'll pull that trigger. We will. Don't press us. And then we'll pull the trigger and there'll be a public option. And all of that stuff happens in 2013. So that means that the debate about the universal single-payer Medicare for all won't happen till 2020, 2025, 2030. Jesus! What that ultimately means, and pay attention to this. I'm talking to, you know, young to old. What that effectively means is it will not be discussed again until everybody listening to this program is dead. Goddamn. You know, the way that the generation of the children of Israel wandering in the desert had to wander until they were dead because they sinned against God, and only the newbies could enter into the kingdom of the promised land and the milk and the honey and the frisbees and wheat checks and all that stuff. We're not just talking about 45,000 people a year. We are talking about a death sentence on an entire collection of generations. Forget about Generation X or Generation Y or baby boomers. You're all the dead generations. Because that is ultimately the goal of the healthcare industry, to make sure that we are all dead before they are. Because they see this as an ultimate struggle for the very survival of the insurance industry. And the survival of the insurance industry is more important than your survival. And I'll be goddamned if I can figure out why it isn't being framed that way. Wow, that's three GDs in a... Wow. Why that hasn't been explained very patiently on the floor of the House or the Senate. It is us against them in the purest sense of the word. If they live, you die. If we win this thing, then the only thing happens is that some no-good, blood-sucking CEOs are out of work. Everybody else still has a job. So really, no kidding. This is not a drill. This is not a joke. This is it. There's one. One chance.
There can be only one.
Was it F. Scott Fitzgerald or Thomas Wolfe, or somebody who said there's no second act in American life? So too with this issue. There's no second act. Maybe this is a one-act play. And when the curtain rings down, it's going to be curtains for the insurance industry, or, and this means a hell of a lot more to me, it's going to be curtains for you. Am I telling you something to do? No, I'm not telling you something to do. I'm merely trying to point out the dynamics of the situation. You act accordingly. Because there's no second chance. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Finishing some emails. I have to multitask here. I'd forgotten to get into the chat room. Bad host, bad. Oh, well. That's what makes this so much different from just about any other version of the so-called talk radio out there. Multitasking. It's the way of the future. It's the next big thing. It's like indoor plumbing. And by the way, don't let me forget that there's a follow-up story to a couple of follow-up stories to what we were talking about in the last with the healthcare business. One of which includes the muzzling of a senior statesman of the Republican Party, if you can imagine. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
I got a couple of little tidbits for you. First of all, it seems that among the other fun and games we've got going today is prosecutors are according to the AP, prosecutors are investigating claims that a former chef and chief groundskeeper of the Oklahoma governor's mansion have raped female prison inmates assigned to work on the museum grounds.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, on the mansion grounds, I mean. You know, just leave it to Oklahoma.
Well, it's not surprising because, you know, that's the heart of the punishment fetish culture. And, you know, once, you know, no matter why she's in there for a reason, and that means that she's there for to be used.
Right. Now, and this kind of folds directly into it. I put up a thing on the main page under the featured section, and it's entitled, and you're going to love the title, Ayn Rand, Murder Groupie.
Oh, I know. Sick, isn't it?
Yeah. For those who haven't read it yet, there is an article, part of an article there, linked there. It's from Open Left, and it turns out that Rand's most famous piece of schlock, otherwise known as Atlas Shrugged, her hero character, John Galt, was based on a real person, a man named William Hickman. Now, William Hickman was a real piece of work.
Oh, yeah, he was a psycho.
William Edward Hickman. He was a sociopath. And that's one of the reasons why she liked him, because he was a sociopath.
Because everything she describes in her,
her diaries, yeah.
No, but there's a phrase for it, enlightened selfishness, or, you know, some such miserable. Basically, the philosophy of Ayn Rand, as it's laid out in Atlas Shrugged and those other pieces of Dreck, is sociopathic behavior.
And this guy, he was put to death for kidnapping and killing a young girl. And, oh, man, the points on that crime alone are, it's a good thing they did put him to death. But she went right down to the wire for this man. She thought it was horrendous that he was put to death, because she said, she felt that if he needed to do this, well, then he should have been allowed to do it.
Of course.
And this is the type of bedrock that philosophy sits on. Deep.
Twisted, isn't it?
Dr. Rick, wipe your design phone, please. Dr. Rick.
Oh, yeah, I hope you email that and the Oklahoma story to Rick, because he will... Well, it's like buttering his bread.
Well, I emailed him the Ayn Rand story a couple days ago. I haven't had a chance to send him the Oklahoma story, but I will. My other point was in regard to the health care thing. We all knew what the insurance companies were going to do. How could you not know?
Yeah. How could you not?
Let's lay this
out real plain, Susan. If the Baucus thing gets turned into law,
yeah,
it will be nothing short of legalized extortion from the American people.
Well, I was thinking more on the lines of legalized rape, because it'll be a case of hand over, people. Here it comes again. And you get to pay for the privilege, too.
I know.
No, that would be like... that would be like Martin Luther King walking up to his own assassin and say, here's some money and a gun. Shoot me.
Yeah, bullets.
Yeah. It's just... you know... Anybody who believes that these insurance companies were going to get on the bandwagon believed in the tooth fairy.
Yeah, but meanwhile, out in Arkansas, there's a miserable little ad running saying, call Blanche Lincoln and thank her for opposing the public option and standing up for working families in Arkansas.
I could say something.
You know, that it really is. It's that Orwellian stuff that got referred to Friday night. You know, freedom is slavery, hope is despair, war is peace.
Convincing the serfs that they're lords, basically.
Yeah.
All the while slipping them the chain around their neck. There's another article up on the web that some organization is calling the latest student loan deals modern indentured servitude.
Oh yeah, that's why I used to make that joke that if only we could prove that Osama bin Laden had a student loan, we could find him yesterday.
Oh yeah, we could nail him tomorrow.
Because the student loan people can find anybody.
Oh yeah.
What a buddy of mine used to refer to as the student loan secret police.
Right. The just to show you how absolutely obnoxious they are. Health insurance company denied health care to a four-month-old baby for a pre-existing condition. His condition, they say he's obese. What is he eating? He's nursing.
Yeah, they missed that whole chubby, happy baby thing. Of course, now they're covering.
Oh, yeah. Now, since it hit the web and it ended up on television, everything like that, now they're walking back real fast. But how many babies have they turned down?
That's the thing. For every time an avarice-driven insurance company gets caught, how many times did they not? It's like catching a burglar. Yeah, you got him with the silver over there in that house, but how many houses has he not been caught in? And there's by extension of the analogy, Susan, there's got to be some sort of public will toward trying to find out how many other burglaries there are.
Mm-hmm. I did when the insurance companies came out with that threat to up the rates, I did like the statement that came out immediately afterwards.
Whose?
Anthony Weiner.
Okay.
He came out and he said that's the best excuse for the public option that exists in creation right there.
Yeah, I had that right at the top of the show as we were discussing it. Only maybe there was a misprint in it. Maybe they added an extra D. It was they had it spelled Weinder, but go figure. Yeah, it's the internet.
Yeah, it's,
burned again.
Yeah, it's just well, you have to take it as you get it. I don't. As far as the comebacks going, you know, as far as verbal comebacks, I think that girl has to go to an anonymous post. Liz Cheney made the comment that Obama should send a woman who lost her son to the in war to pick up the Peace Prize. In the name of all of the fallen soldiers.
Somebody now that's Orwellian.
Yeah, like Cindy Sheehan.
Oh, it would be lovely if he broke it off in her that way. But then Cindy'd say, "No, I won't go and pick it up because Barack Obama's a warmonger." And
yeah.
Then we'd be
but,
there.
Yeah, you know, just the comeback was just priceless.
Oh, it is. And I mean no disrespect to Cindy Sheehan out of that. It's just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Cindy doesn't give a rat's ass about politics. She cares about ending war. And so Democrat, Republican, anarcho-syndicalist, it doesn't matter. If you're not ending a war but maintaining one, you know get them pass.
Yep. Exactly.
And frankly, I think that's a perfectly reasonable and rational approach.
It doesn't bother me any. My idea about Afghanistan is leave quickly.
Doesn't make any sense to stay.
Yeah. Anyway,
not that I can figure out.
Yeah, I can't.
And I'm glad you did let me know about the turned down baby, because I've got the press release, the follow up press release. Now that they have decided to cover said infant, And I think that probably bears a few minutes of going, you know, just a little journalistic fine-tooth combing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's it's something. I've read it. It is truly a piece of work.
Well, I'll let you get to it then.
All right, Susan, you take care.
Okie doke.
All right.
You love to Agnes.
All right, bye-bye. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Oh, boy, you know, it's becoming exhausting the length they will go. You know, there comes a point where you have to just say, I at this point, there's no arguing with them. Just beat them to a pulp.
In this case, who are them?
The right wing, the sociopaths, the Calvinists, you know, those people, that bunch. Because really, you cannot reason with them. There is no reason. And I think, even though I didn't agree with him politically on a lot of stances, but when you look back to Churchill, he was absolutely right when it came up to Hitler.
Well, sure he was. That's he made his career out of being right about Hitler.
Okay, because in many ways, Churchill is the right-wing sociopath himself, and it takes one another.
Well, I don't know that he was a right-wing sociopath, because at one point he was left, at another point he was right. But what he was a political opportunist, and he was also, there's no getting around, a profound racist and a nasty bigot.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. And I just,
but he was also a man of his age. I mean, that he was, you know, William Manchester, who wrote the biography American Caesar of MacArthur, also started on a biography of Churchill that I don't think he finished because he died. But he referred to him as the last lion because he really was. Churchill was the last Victorian statesman. In the British Empire.
Oh, absolutely, and he believed in the British Empire. That was his state, the British Empire. After all, made it, the empire was very good to him. Going back to Duke of Marlborough, he did the Trump.
Right, and he was fascinated with his history as such.
Yeah, it's just that he saw there was no reasoning, and I think Barack Obama is, in our day, what's the prime minister who was the appeaser again? He escapes me. I should know this.
Oh, Neville Chamberlain?
Yes. Okay. It comes a point where you have to say, you know what? F these keepers, no. And I think he just, and this is why I said, I really hope this is the biggest political rope-a-dope ever. Because to show that, and he's going to come out and strike in November sometime and say, look, there's no appeasing, executive order, whatever, boom, Medicare for all kind of thing.
Well, I don't think it'll happen on a Medicare for all basis. I don't think it can happen on an executive order basis. It has to be legislated, but I'm with you. I'm in that corner. I hope he's. It's just hard to do after a while to sit there and wow, you know what it is. He's a great chess player and he's six moves ahead of everybody. He may be, but right now it just looks like he is trying to build consensus. But maybe this instead of just coming out all in your face and ham-fisted. And saying, you know, it's my way or the highway, because, you know, Lord knows that's how the Bush administration did it. Maybe by saying, you know, look, we tried, we reached across the aisle, we literally spent 6 months and let 23,000 Americans die for want of health care in our attempt to get one, even one Republican to sign on for what America needs. Enough is enough. And send some sort of a signal that it's time to do that it's time to do, you know, at the very minimum, a public option.
And the thing is, you have to look at the subtle racism. And, you know, no offense to you, Bob, but I don't think you can. Believe you me, you do a good job, man.
No, I can't. Look, I'm so pink, I sunburn under the refrigerator light bulb. I know I can't.
Okay, and that's why I appreciate men like you and Mike and Guy, is because you have to understand, yes, he's a black man, and one thing I know, being as such, you better have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed and your commas in the right place when a power move.
I don't doubt that a dime's worth, Kevin. Let me say that if I have any ability that I may have to comprehend that issue comes from just the, you know, not even 1/10 of 1% of what real racism is, but I at least get a sense for it out of the way that the rest of the country looks down its nose at people from Appalachia. You know, we're stupid. We're slow. We talk funny. We're dumb hillbillies. We're inbred. We're incestuous. We can't be trusted. You know, we're shiftless. We're lazy. When in fact, Appalachian people are among the most industrious on the planet, because we've had to, at least in the nation, not on the planet, but at least in the nation, because we have had to make do with less.
Exactly.
You know, we have this habit, you know, everybody jokes about rednecks and cars up on blocks in the yard. You know why we put our cars up on blocks in the yard? Not because we have some vision of some sort of transcendent mechanical art.
Yeah.
It's called saving them for parts.
Saving what?
Saving them for parts. And then when we go and buy another used one, we try to buy the same thing that we had before so that that one sitting up on a block can be recycled and be parted out into the one that's running.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's, and, you know, the hubcaps all over the place. You know what? People need hubcaps.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, and there's a book called How Did the Irish Become White? And again, you know, Celtic people like black people now, and this is why I have a kindred spirit, not because of bloodlines, but very similar history, has had their history stolen from them. Going back to Julius Caesar. But Julius Caesar made his fortune off of the blood of Celtic people, the Gauls.
Sure he did. Absolutely, and I'm glad you recognize that, because it is the absolute truth, and it's something that I've remarked upon in the past. You know, people in Italy and people in Greece and the Mediterranean world in general, they had a long and well-seated religion before there was ever any hint of a gospel or an Old Testament or a new one. But they got it taken from them by the rise of the church and its bogarting of cultural traditions that did not belong to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you can lay that at the door of the church. I can't, being as I'm one of those people from that area, although I'm told, you know, yeah, I'm Scottish, but before that I was, some sort of crazed-ass Viking. The fact of the matter is, going back, there's nobody in Western Europe and nobody on the British Isles who has a real understanding for what their native religion or culture was before it was supplanted and scattered and overlain
and wiped out
by the Romans.
Yeah, because when you think about it, and I say this, if it wasn't for the discovery of the New World, Celtic people would not exist, because it was either assimilate or die or set off to some remote area. And if you look at American history when it comes to the Scotch-Irish, guess where they are? Appalachia.
Yeah. Exactly.
Only, you know,
But from a founding there, they spread out to become a tremendous genealogical force in the expansion of America. You know, that's why,
yeah.
You know, that's why what our buddy Joe Bajant writes about so cogently in Deer Hunting with Jesus is so important.
You know, even, and that's the thing, you know, like a lot of people don't understand, black people too, and unfortunately most white people, and most white people are Scots-Irish, is that this game is divide and conquer. Okay. It really is, because the thing is, and this is when it hit me hard, is like, whenever you go to Walter Reed in Washington, D.C., in certain parts, guess who's coming in and out of there? People with accents from the Appalachian region, mostly.
And southern accents. I mean, there's a big difference in somebody somebody from Mingo County, West Virginia's accent, and somebody from Tidewater, Virginia's accent, and somebody from Lee County, Alabama's accent. But yeah, it's that the southern accent and variations on it, as we recognize and understand it, are all variations on Scots-Irish accents. You know, not finishing one's ing words and saying n instead of ing. That's classically Irish and Scots-Irish.
Yes, and you know, you gotta forgive my New Yorkerness, because to me it's all the same too. You know.
Well, that's okay. Everybody's to me. Everybody from that area sounds the same to me until you get up around Boston, and that's a whole nother kettle of fish.
Yes, yes. And I think the only means why, particularly, you know, not the Scotch Irish, but the Irish who came later along, they were able to hold on to much of their culture, especially in and every other group who came along, part of it, was able, had the luxury of doing so. We owe it to the Irish in particular, because they were the ones who thought up of urban political machinery.
Yeah, well, and by, you know, by dint of necessity, they banded together and opposed the bigotry to which they were subjected. You know, and that's that wave of Irish immigration that comes as a result of things like the potato famine.
Yeah, because if you ever look at the gangs in New York, that movie, which is a great movie about how of historic New York history too, even though a lot of it is fictionalized, but it gives it a pretty clear of what, you know, and if you give it. Huge schism was between the Scotch-Irish, the ones who came before the potato famine, who had to assimilate and, you know, give up Catholic-like religions, whether it be Catholic or, you know, Anglican, and become more Protestant and Calvinist, and the newer generations who kind of stuck to the traditional Catholic faith.
Yeah.
That was the schism between the two, and that's where the fights used to occur. And believe it or not, the same thing happens within the black community. You know, I come from, you know, West Indian black. A majority of the West Indian blacks only been here post Dr. King assassination. And then, you know, you have the older West Indian crowd who, for rival reasons, had to assimilate more into the American black community. And then, you know, you have the American black community who's always been here. And there is a huge difference in the black community, especially here in New York in the Northeast, and within New York, for African-American New York politics, especially in my district. You know? So, you know, the same thing is going on in many ways.
Oh, and I don't know, exactly.
Yeah, it's history repeating itself.
And keep everybody at everybody else's throats, and we were here first, and it reminded when I was viewing that video the other day of Adam Pauley, that's the guy's name, who had the skinhead tattoos and assaulted that picnic on July 4th on Kayford Mountain. I was viewing that the other day, and that one phrase really caught me. He said, "Get off our mountain, whiz here first." Oh, really? Were you Hiawatha?
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, what about the red people, the reddish brown?
You were here first, were you? But that's such a classic attitude, you know. Oh, we invaded before you invaded.
Yeah,
and it's like being from Oklahoma and say, you know, I can trace my lineage back to the original Sooners. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're proud of that? You're proud of being able to trace your lineage back to people who actively stole land in violation of federal law? Good on you, buddy.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, you know, I've shared with a few friends, you know, what I'm about to do in my decision. And a lot of them are like, well, why don't you give up your U.S. citizenship then? And I was like, back off, you know. It's like a total offense. And unfortunately, this is what, you know, the right wing and the power elite does. You know, they make people so invested into certain institutions like the industrial military complex, even though they're not really receiving any benefits from it or very little. And this is why, like, oh, well, if you leave Afghanistan, those 5,000 before it died for nothing. Kind of thing. It's that, and until we face the truth, and as hard as it be, we're never going to pull out of Afghanistan or Iraq, or we will always have a presence there because they're going to use that line. Well, if we pull out now, then those 5,000 would have died for nothing. But the reality is, I'm sorry to tell you, but they did die for nothing. They died to make Cheney and his boys rich. And I'm sorry to say it, G.I. Joe, you lost your leg to make Cheney and his homeboys rich. And until you face that, there's no change that's going to happen.
Exactly.
And this is why I've often said that I refuse. And the thing is, I've had plenty of ancestry pre, you know, World War One, which was really the real death knell of the British. Well, the things were planted, but World War One did far more destruction to the British Empire and all. And I tell people, you know, because I've come across some very gullible guys who try to volunteer so they can serve in Iraq and all that. And I said, why are you going to do that for? And they're like, well, you know, serve my country and all this nonsense. And they're like, why is he serving all that? Look, my ancestry has already given up enough blood for people who don't. And made their fortune. You know, you can do what you need to do, but that's the bottom line. You know, no Iraqi is coming around in Brooklyn to bomb up the place. Now, they may go across the water to Manhattan and do it, but they ain't coming to Memphis, Tennessee, or, you know, or wherever I live in. Heck, I live 6 blocks away from the World Jewish League of Barbecue headquarters, and they're not even bombing that.
Your audio is getting kind of muffled there, Kevin.
I'm sorry. I said I live 5 blocks from the, you ever heard of the Lubavitcher Jewish sect?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I live about 5 blocks.
Hardcores.
Yeah, 5 to 6 blocks away from their world headquarters. That's the ground zero for them. And they leave that untouched. So they don't hate the Jews that much. What they hate is the money and the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, much of which is not, you know, right. What they hate is us. And our corporate structure, and our financial finagling, and messing around inside their well-being. You know, I picked up crazy little aside. I picked up pomegranates were like 3 for $4 the other day at the grocery store. I wish they'd been organic. They weren't. But I picked up 3 pomegranates because my kids love them, and I brought one each to Doodle and Ferg and Margie. And just handing those pomegranates to them, I was reminded of that story about pomegranate growing in Afghanistan. That the planting pomegranate orchards over there, because apparently that countryside does really, really well with pomegranate trees. I don't know. I'm not an agronomist. But I was reminded of the success that British man had in doing that, because it was long-term, it was of value, and it was a lot less dangerous than trying to raise opium poppies.
Oh, yeah.
And he went in and convinced the local farmers to raise these, set up a guaranteed buy for their produce at a fair trade rate. And look at that. He just took a whole bunch out of the opium poppy market. However many opium poppies those fields would suit, he replaced with pomegranates.
Like I've said to other people before, you know how you can end the so-called illegal drug trade, which I say is kind of questionable of the morality of it? Pay people fair wages for growing regular food. Give them a good price on selling bananas and coconuts and pomegranates and things that people actually eat. You'd be surprised how unavailable cocaine and opium will become. Now, people will probably keep on smoking their ganja, which I don't mind, but you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. It's not, and this is no insult to you, it's not a complicated idea.
It's not. And like I said, this is why, I cannot fully buy into the fundamentalist gloom and doom scenarios, because I truly believe technology will resolve anything. You remember the conversation we had last week this time, saying how we can end the tide water rising? The ocean's rising, swelling up. If we filter that water and flood a lot of deserts within it, so they can have drinking water.
Yeah, desalinate and...
The technology is there. And use hydroponics to raise crops. Because the only reason why oil...
Compare that with the fact that, irrigation has its own problems because it salinates the soil ultimately anyway. But that's stuff that crop science can maybe solve.
Yeah.
If 70% of the Earth's farming regions are stand to be desert in 25, 35 years, I'd say the time to get to work on that would be 100 years ago. But, yeah, I'm crazy.
Well, and the thing that the only reason why oil is such a big deal is because that's the only card they have to play. But I'm pretty sure they will stop drilling for oil tomorrow if they had an alternative. I'm almost certain of it, Bob. It's like, I'll never forget that scene in Lawrence of Arabia, the very beginning, when the guy shoots the other guy, the opposing Arab, over the water well because he's drinking. Scarcity leads to division, and that's what the right wing thrives off of, scarcity. So they're going to do everything to make things scarce so they can divide and conquer.
Right, make everything phony baloney scarce and go from there.
Exactly. And that's why... Especially scarce when there's a whole abundance of diamonds. And a whole lot of things are artificially scarce. So they can create these false positions.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because what? Rubies and emeralds are far... real rubies and real emeralds are far more scarce than diamonds. But an artificial market of scarcity has been created around them.
Yeah.
Oh, and in terms of all this, by the way, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that I had, my 25 seconds of Lonesome Roads earlier today, the rodeo clown.
Yeah.
And be darned if he wasn't making a pitch inside the show, talking with an expert about gold.
Oh
But here's the fun part. The guy, the expert came on and said, listen, you know, with a $20 gold piece, a man could buy a nice suit of clothes. The wool hasn't changed. Blah, 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 blah. And the guy was ripping off a speech, ripping off a riff that Tom Hartman did 2 years ago.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I was listening to that story. If you took a $20 gold piece, you could buy a brand new suit. If you take a $1,000 gold, whatever, you can still buy the suit because that $1,000 is worth it. I remember that exactly.
You know, they can't do anything on their own. They got to bogart somebody else. They got to rip off somebody else. They got to. It just never ceases to amaze.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But, you know, and that's what it is. Scarcity creates division. And the more scarcity you create, the more division you will have. Hence, you can do whatever you want.
Not a hard concept to grasp. Kevin, thanks a lot. A lot of good food for thought this evening.
Okay, my brother.
All right, you
always
take.
A pleasure, man.
Oh man, it's a joy. We will talk soon, okay?
Okay, sir.
All right, later. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Brooklyn. That's our buddy Kevin. Scarcity, artificial scarcity. It's a thesis worth exploring, don't you think? Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well, better than has been, but you know how that goes. Well, let's see. Start on a couple of things I've heard you talk about while I've been on the thing. Let's see. I figure what we ought to do is we ought to put together, this is my group to go over and pick up the Nobel Prize. Start off with Pat Tillman's parents.
There you go.
Let's see, the Jersey Girls.
Right.
Sandy Sheehan. The Dixie Chicks.
That would be nice.
And let's see, Jessica Lynch. Just a poke somebody in the eye for the fun of it, too.
Oh, that would be...
You know, just a nice...
No Lindy England.
No, not quite. I mean, there are some others I'm sure I've left out a few here and there, but that was just a small list I just put together just off the top of my head. All right, let's see, what do we got today? Let's see. I don't know if you want to get into it. I sent you the thing from the Courier Journal about what Chinless Mitch told.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I guess at the switch over from the top of the hour. Yeah, imagine feeling like you're somebody enough to tell an elder statesman of the Republican Party to shut them up about health care.
Yeah, I saw that. I went to the Courier Journal. I saw that, and I just went, yeah. It's like, say, the new Republican mantra, don't let Obama get a win anywhere. It's like, oh, well.
We're already hearing from some high-ranking Republicans that we shouldn't do that. That's helping the president, Dole said. He later specified that the people he referred to included one very prominent Republican who happens to be the Republican leader of the Senate.
But I ain't going to mention it by name.
Except that I won't mention names except to say that he hasn't got a chin.
It's true. Oh, I'll tell you what. The one I liked this weekend was our, I don't know what to call him anymore, I guess. He's not quite media whore number one now, but he's working on it, Mr. Kurtz.
Oh, yeah, we had lots of fun with Mr. Kurtz at the beginning of the program.
Oh, okay. The one where he was going after the lady from the White House, and I'm sitting there going, look, when you got, please. When they were running W's press releases all the way down to the typos, I mean, how else do you want to refer to them as a wing of the Republican Party?
I don't know how you can. I don't know what else there is.
You know what I mean? I mean, when they were including typos, I mean, you could have the hand thing there in the White House and there was coffee and it was the same words. I mean, either that or somebody's damn good clairvoyant. I got to tell you, somebody should be able to be asking about lottery numbers. Oh, God. And to be something else CNN did the last couple nights. What is going on with their, I don't know what you want to call it, their special reports division? We get a special report on Jonestown? What was it, 25 years ago? 30?
Ah, well, don't blame them. They just noticed.
I'm just sitting there going, well, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand it's, you know, an important event in history. Why now? I mean, you know, I'm sorry. I think there's a few more things you could be covering. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the big push on this? I mean, it just blew my mind. I'm just sitting there going, you know, guys, there's a lot of the things more recent we could be covering, spending our time on, when you all claim you don't have time enough and resources enough to even keep, you know, foreign offices open. You know, somebody up and down the line is much more, I like the story. That's right. But, no, the one that got me today was you saw the thing Mr. Kurtz had his little article comparing Mr. Letterman with Mr. Ensign. No, let's compare Mr. Letterman with Mr. Ensign. Let's compare Mr. Letterman with Mr. O'Reilly. I said, you know,
because, you know, Mr. Ensign is a family values Republican who has trumpeted his, right.
But, I mean, the thing is, he's trying to compare them, and I'm sitting there going, no, why don't we compare what happened in the media? You know, when one guy has had to essentially admit he was sexually harassing a member of his staff until he paid her off. But oops, I don't remember Kurtz and Company getting all that blown up when Bill O'Reilly did it. You know, I don't remember them doing hours and hours of coverage on it like they have with David Letterman.
Yeah, me either, oddly enough.
And you know what? I won't say it's good. It's something to be admired. But you know what? These were the Letterman thing. These were unmarried people. You know, unmarried people can get in all kinds of different little combinations. You know, Bill at the time I think was a thing called a married man. You know, so you know.
And you know, just checking. When's the last time David Letterman opined on family values?
You know what I mean? It's like I say, David admits, you know, tells what he is. I mean, he comes right up there for the most part and says it. I mean, it's just like, look, guys, these were unmarried people at the time because they're wanting to complain like he was married at the time. It's like, he's just been married like 6 months, even that. Okay, he was dating this woman. Fine, they're dating. There's a lot of different rules of dating. I mean, it's more than one people at a time. It's not, you know, not everybody does it, but some do. But, you know, that's here or there. What else do we have? You know, the story on the things with ESPN and the pig man. Apparently some of these people at the Rams are essentially saying, we don't want him.
Well, I've been reading some follow-up along the way, mostly the commentary from players within the NFL saying, yeah, sorry, I don't care how much money he's got. I wouldn't play for him.
The head of the Players Association?
Yep.
It's coming up. I'm sorry, but, you know, it's like I say, Rush made all these statements. Now we can go back and look at them. Let's see what Rush has said over the years, just for the fun of it.
Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose. That's funny to white people.
Yeah, it's like I say, yeah, you're going to put him in charge. You want him to purchase an organization, you know, that is about 85% African-American, most likely. You know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way the demographics break down on it. You know, I'm just sitting there going, I don't think, like I say, and I still say, you know, they've done it before, that the NFL, you know, has said people can't buy into their companies because of morals problems. Like I said, if somebody ring the bell, we got a winner.
Yep, there's another toaster out the window.
But, a few other things. First of all, how's the money? I didn't get to hear you from the beginning. Have you made your...
We made enough to get the lupine pest off the porch and continue past October 21st. We made the $1,100 mark.
I didn't know counting the regular
monthly contributions and throwing that into the pot too. We're in good shape. We made that part. That just means that we've got until October the 31st to make the regular monthly bills.
Well, I'm sorry, I sent you what I could, bud. You know how it is.
And it is much appreciated.
Well, it's one of those things. I'm sorry. Me and PayPal have a generous hate of each other, so that's why I just sent cash.
Understood. Understood completely.
I think PayPal to me, every time I look at it, I just want to just get a cold shiver and go, no!
Well, I'd love it. I'd love it if there was a less rapacious, less avaricious, less nefarious alternative, but I've yet to find it.
Okay. All right, now on to our favorite subject. Did you get to watch Mr. Rodriguez have a meltdown?
He done. Old Plugs Rodriguez done come unglued.
it's like, say, we just threw a boy off our team last week for acting like that. You know, it's like anybody that walks within the 10-foot radius of him, he just went off on, apparently, for what they were showing.
Oh, he's got a vile temper. I mean, I remember when he dropped West Virginia like a hot rock. This would be the head coach of Michigan, formerly the head coach of WVU, for those of you who hate sports and will send me emails telling me how much you do. But Patrick White, who was a fine young man, I think it was Pat White, after Rodriguez left and they were having their practices, somebody said, well, how's it going, Pat? And he said, you know, I got to tell you, it's nice to practice and not be called names and sworn at all the time.
Uh-huh.
But what I found most interesting was that, in the fourth quarter, was it, he pulled Tate Forcier,
yep,
this guy who had been the second coming of Tom Brady,
mm-hmm,
and he benched him.
Yeah.
Rodriguez did. And then later, the local sports media there in Ann Arbor said, well, is there a problem between you and Tate? And, of course, the Plugs Rodriguez said, well, no, there aren't any problem between me and Tate, and everything's just fine, and you people just do fine to quit making stuff up. And then the University of Michigan conveniently refused to allow Tate Forcier to have access to the media.
I just watched that, and I just went, you know, something. I was sitting there going, something about to happen, because, I mean, he just blew a few. I'm just sitting there going, somebody must have hit him when the camera wasn't looking or something, because I said, if man has that kind of a fit on the sideline, that's when they need to go over and put something in a Gatorade and give it to him. Here you go.
Well, I'm thinking his next big Gatorade bath's going to be more vinegar than Gatorade.
Well, we had a week. We actually did something right. Why, we don't know, but we did.
Look at little quarterback Crompton looking like an NCAA SEC quarterback. He had a couple of dodgy moments, but did he? He looked okay.
Well, you know how it is. We get a week off, and then we get to go. We get to go down to beautiful Birmingham or Tuscaloosa. We get to go down and play with the gentleman. The gentleman was.